Welcome to the Thriving Birth Worker Podcast, a space for conversations about how you, the birth worker, can create not only a fulfilling and sustainable career, but a joyful and thriving life. I'm Erin Underwood, an educator, movement specialist, mother of four boys, and a total anatomy nerd. My passion is to see birth workers encouraged, supported, and empowered in their careers and life. Hello, friends. Today, I'm excited to bring you this conversation I had with Kim Bopney, who is aptly nicknamed the Vagina Coach. Kim is on a mission to break through taboos and redefine how we think about women's health. And just to be clear, she says that light bladder leakage is not just part of being a woman. She's passionate about wanting women to know how to connect to their pelvic floor so that they can overcome challenges like incontinence and organ prolapse and regain a sense of control and power in their lives. We discuss what a vagina coach is, common misconceptions and assumptions about pelvic floor health, breaking shame around the pelvic floor not functioning optimally, and so much more. So without further ado, here is my conversation with Kim, the Vagina Coach. Hello, and welcome to today's podcast. Today, we have Kim, the Vagina Coach, on the line with us today. How are you today?
I'm well, thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
Awesome. Let's just dive into that. What is a vagina coach?
Well, I kind of just made it up. It's not something I grew up thinking that I would become by any means. And it happened a little bit by accident, on purpose, I guess, in a sense. So I had been working in the field of pelvic health for many years. And I started out in the birth side, so preparing women for pregnancy. And my handle was fitness doula. So I combined my doula training with my fitness principles, my fitness training. And then as I evolved in my business and as I started to work with women beyond pregnancy and some even into menopause, the term fitness doula didn't quite resonate with as many people. And I was speaking to a group of women entrepreneurs. This is probably, I think it's about 4 years ago now. And my talk was how optimizing your pelvic health can make you a better entrepreneur, mompreneur. And it was a 2-day conference, and there was many speakers on various aspects of, you know, marketing and strategy, all types of business coaches. And when it was my turn to come up, I walked on stage and said, you know, and now you have a vagina coach for your business. And it just kind of came out, and it was like a light bulb moment. And I said, that sums up what I do. It's a word that people they won't forget. It's also a word that not everybody really wants to say. And I said, you know, I really want to normalize this and make it okay. And so that's where it all started. That's kind of how it happened.
That's awesome. Yeah, it is for sure a word that gets people's attention. Yeah. Yes. So just what do you do right now as far as do you work one-on-one with clients, or how do you structure your business?
Yeah. So it also has kind of evolved a little bit. So when I first started, how I got into it was through a biofeedback device, a pelvic floor product, essentially, that I used to help prepare for birth. It was called the Epino. And I had no intention of turning it into a business. I just said, you know, well, I think more people should know about this. And I contacted the company and said, you know, can I sell these to people in here in Canada? It's from Germany. And that's how it started. It was very much on the side. I was promoting really through the midwives who I had used in my pregnancies. And then I was selling this, and I started a website. And then I said, well, I need to get the word out more. So then I started a workshop, kind of like a presentation evening called Kegels and Cocktails. And then I did a workshop called Prepare to Push. And that was kind of how it started. And that's what I did mainly. And I also did some one-on-one client work. And how that has evolved over the years is Prepare to Push became a book and now is an online program. And Kegels and Cocktails still runs. I also have another online program for non-pregnant people called Kegel Mojo. And those are kind of DIY programs that people can do online. And then people who want additional support or help or one-on-one guidance do coaching with me. And I coach by the month. And then I also run an online sort of challenge that's an app-based program. So I'm trying to get the information out to as many people and make it as accessible to different learning, to different financial situations and needs. And I would say the bulk of the people who come and kind of work or do my things is actually through the 28-day challenge that I have. And then from there, that's kind of a, because people still, like, as you said, what is a vagina coach? They don't totally know what pelvic floor fitness is or what it is that I do. So I think the app gives them a little bit of a taste of what it is, and that it's not just sit at every red light and do 500 Kegels, you know, every day for 28 days. So, so that's the bulk of it is supporting an online community. And then I have, I'd say probably 40% of my business would be one-on-one coaching.
Awesome. Yeah. I love what you're saying as far as demystifying, but also I feel like the pelvic floor is either super mystical or it's way oversimplified. And like you said, like just do 500 Kegels every day and you'll be fine, or, you know, even more.
Yeah.
Or it's like, we'll never understand.
Yeah.
And so what is your approach as far as why do you think there's so much mystery or oversimplification, and how would you summarize just kind of initially understanding the pelvic floor and pelvic floor health?
Mm-hmm. There's lots of different facets, I think, that integrate and influence the lack of awareness or the oversimplification or the mystification. Is that even a word?
But sure.
I think that there's lots. There's the fact that it has been a topic that wasn't spoken about. It was something taboo. You know, you don't talk about that. It's private. And there, you know, historically, I don't know exactly when the transition happened, but there was predominantly male physicians. It was maybe harder to talk about. I know that there was a study that showed that women, the reason they don't bring the topic of pelvic health challenges up is because they don't want to embarrass their healthcare practitioner rather than them being embarrassed themselves. So I think that's just there's a lack of communication or a lack of understanding the importance of, I think, that has led to that, has contributed to that. Social media has definitely played a role in increasing awareness about a lot of things in life, and definitely pelvic health. I mean, I know when I started selling that product and I was trying to create a website and get the awareness out, the Twitter had just come on the scene, and Facebook was very much still just a personal platform. It wasn't used for business. So Twitter was our social media, and then hashtags started to be used. And I remember using hashtag pelvic floor, and it was, you know, like listening for crickets. There was not really a lot happening. And now it seems that every second person that I see on social media is talking about something to do with the pelvic floor. So it's really good that awareness has been created. And now we just need to hopefully have that trickle into the other healthcare communities. And I would say a big one where I see a lot of resistance is in the medical community. So there's many facets. It could be that, you know, because it's been taboo for so long, but also I think in the medical community, they have such a short period of time. Unless you're paying privately for healthcare, the public system is, you're very limited. You have sort of a 7 to 10 minute window, and their job is really to rule out any major challenges. They don't have time to address all of the, all aspects, or to teach a pelvic floor Kegel, like a contraction properly, or to assess the pelvic floor thoroughly. So that's another issue, I think. So it's timing. It's also just knowledge that media sends, well, the messages that media sends, and that it's just, that's just what happens when you get older. It's just part of being a woman. And so I think there's a lot of acceptance that's there as well of just, that's just how it is. I'm supposed to suffer. There's pads that I can wear, or, you know, sex just is supposed to suck now because I've had children, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot of different influences there. And really I'm seeing already that the rise in awareness is contributing to things starting to shift. So people may first hear about it through social media, but that then at least prompts them to ask or to seek out somebody who could help them, pelvic floor physios, you know, that type of thing. So It's slowly starting to shift, thankfully.
Yeah, absolutely. Even because after my last child was born, he's almost six now. Mm-hmm. I can see even the information that was accessible 6 years ago versus mm-hmm. now is just absolutely dramatic. It's mm-hmm. just, I mean, when I Googled and I looked and I searched, it was so hard to find anything outside of just a general, well, you're a woman now and yeah, you can get surgery or whatever. And I had to really dig to find any information. And now, I mean, I'm also in this world, so it's easier for me to see it, but I'm also so encouraged by finding a lot of people who are willing to talk about it and willing to, just lay out, well, let's try options. You have options. And it's also this idea of it's not a death sentence.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yes, I feel like totally. There's just such a strong emotional connection to our pelvic floor, which mm-hmm. is good. I mean, that's very, you know, vulnerable part of our body.
Mm-hmm.
And when it feels broken, mm-hmm. Especially, you know, there's just kind of this idea of it's broken beyond repair, or it's mm-hmm. like, a rubber band that once it loses elasticity, it's just broken. It's just the way it is. And to be like, well, we don't know, but there's options. Let's talk about it.
Totally. Yeah.
So much more, there's so much more hope. Like when I first started researching for my own healing, it was so hopeless. There wasn't anything that anyone who was like kind of talking about it, you can heal. It's possible.
Yeah.
So what are some of the most common misconceptions or assumptions that you find that people believe about their pelvic floor?
What you've just touched on, that I hear the word broken a lot, like a lot mm-hmm. of people, they might say it kind of jokingly, but really it's what they really feel, is that I feel like I'm broken. And the misconception that that's just what happens after you have a baby, the misconception that it's, there's also the misconception, I think, that it only happens to older people. So then when they are experiencing something that doesn't feel right, or that they think something's wrong, they don't necessarily know who to ask for help, because they feel like it's a quote unquote older person's problem.
Mm-hmm.
There's that it's, you know, that this is just the way it's going to be, that, you know, I there's no hope for me. There's no way that this can heal. There's, I've tried Kegels. They don't work. I went to my doctor and they gave me drugs. So some people get down the path of drugs and surgery. And so then there's also the people who potentially do have surgery. And I'm not against surgery, because it can be life-changing and it can be warranted on occasion. But there's also a lack of information on that side, which, again, I would love for the medical community to incorporate pelvic floor physio into the process of surgery, prehab and rehab. So I think surgeries would have better outcomes and less chance of recurrence. So women who may have had surgery and then a few years later they say, oh, well, my surgery didn't work, or my surgery failed. And really what's failed is their healthcare provider that didn't necessarily set them up for success. So there's, I think, the misconception that there's some misconception that it's only fixed by surgery. And then there's also misconception that once you've had surgery and potentially it hasn't worked, quote unquote, that, you know, it'll fail again, or surgery doesn't work. So they sort of feel like they're out of options and that they just need to accept it, which is really challenging and unfortunate. And it is never, absolutely never too late to make a difference. And there are so many different options now that women can incorporate in terms of build a collaborative healthcare team. And it can be hormone based, it can be nutrition based, it can be movement based. And, obviously the medical community plays a part of that as well. And I really am, my big mission and kind of hope is that more and more people seek out and build that collaborative network that will ultimately help them.
Absolutely. Yeah. The collaboration is so important, because I think sometimes as healthcare providers, all of us enter this field because we want to help. I mean, mm-hmm. everyone has just that big heart of gold that wants to help. And it feels sometimes like if I can't answer all your questions, if I can't bring every single thing to the table, then know, there's almost this pressure of like, I should have all the pieces of the puzzle. Mm-hmm. And to be like, no, I have one piece. Like, that's all I've got. But I have this network of people and they hold all the other pieces and let's work together. And I think that's really powerful.
Yeah. And I think that if the other thing that you see on the professional side is some people are afraid to collaborate because they think that they will lose clients. And if I'm just going to give you my secret sauce, but I don't want you to know that other person's secret sauce because then you might never come back to me. And so I think it's also about us understanding as a collection of healthcare providers that we all have awesome secret sauces. Mm-hmm. And really, we just need to better understand one another and how we can cross promote, and that it's the intention is really to help people get better. And so there's pieces that each of us can provide to each person that can ultimately help them.
Absolutely. Yeah. And just even for us as providers to help break down any like shame narrative, because it's really interesting. You know, the younger generation feeling like, oh, this is an old person disease, like you were saying, or an old person issue. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of my older clients will be like, oh, it's just too late for me. Like, yeah. I'm past the point of being able to heal from this. I'm, you know, 50 years postpartum. So it's just the way it is. And so it's like, no, the body is so capable of healing no matter where you're at. So
totally.
Yeah. For us to kind of reinforce that message is really powerful.
Yeah, for sure.
So you've mentioned Kegels a few times. Let's dive into that because there's a lot of controversy around that. So for a while, it was like the answer of, you know, people had their systems and their protocols and they were given, you know, do your Kegel however many times a day, every time you're at a stoplight or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then there's been this swing to, oh, you know, don't do Kegels, just do squats. Mm-hmm. And almost saying, you know, kind of throwing Kegels out the window. But then there are some people who are still holding on to them. Where do you land on that? And how would, I mean, I guess let's just start by defining a Kegel.
Yeah, sure. And I always say, you know, some people say Kegel, some people say Kegel, and it's kind of like tomato, tomato. It doesn't really, I don't think it really matters. But
yeah,
what we're talking about is an exercise that was designed by Dr. Kegel. And he saw women experiencing more challenges contracting and relaxing their pelvic floors after childbirth. And he used a device called a perineometer, which was a biofeedback device that was inserted into the vagina so that women could see when they were doing a contraction and then when they were relaxing. And the intention behind Kegels is supposed to be taking the pelvic floor through its range of motion with the intention that we would build up strength and endurance. And what's happened over time is, like many things in our society or in fitness, people think harder is better or more is better. And the emphasis, when people think of a Kegel exercise, they think of a squeeze. They don't necessarily consider the letting go, and they don't consider that there's also a bit of a lift that happens as well. So over time, people think of Kegels as just squeezing and often holding. And a lot of people then also hold their breath. Some people actually bear down. And they forget about the letting go. And then when you add that to now what our kind of quote unquote modern day lifestyle is that involves a lot of sitting and different movement patterns to compensate for the fact that we sit a lot, then the pelvic floor is not necessarily taken through its normal range of motion that has historically happened with movement. And so Kegels are often prescribed, but they're very rarely taught. And so again, people think that there's, if they've heard of anything, you in maybe in a magazine, and I'm talking back, things are changing a bit now, but it used to be that you would sit at every red light, do your Kegels or do them while you're brushing your teeth. And there's a lot to consider when we think about the purpose of Kegels and how they should be done. And one of which is how the body is held and the reaction and what that pelvic floor needs. So as we consider in fitness, if somebody came to me and they had really tight trapezius muscles and they sat at a desk hunched over all the time, I wouldn't give that person a huge amount of trapezius building exercises like shoulder shrugs or something like that. I wouldn't eliminate trapezius work, but I would not focus on it. And I would give them a lot of the, what I call down training. So the stretching, the release work that would help down regulate that overactivity that might be happening. And the same thing applies to the pelvic floor. So my philosophy is that the pelvic floor needs to be taken through its range of motion. And I do love the philosophy that you can, the pelvic floor is very activated in a squat. So there is a urogynecologist in Reno, Nevada named Dr. Bruce Crawford, who has a unique way of evaluating the pelvic floor through movement. And he used wireless EMG recordings of the pelvic floor and the adductors. So your inner thighs, your glutes, and your transversus, the deep abdominal muscles. And he looked at a bunch of different movements, and he wanted to determine where in those movements the pelvic floor was the most engaged, and also which exercises used the pelvic floor the most. And squats was definitely one of the highest ones. So we know that the pelvic floor is active in squats. That's not to say, though, that everybody needs to do squats and that will transform the pelvic floor. There are also people whose pelvic floor isn't necessarily working optimally. So perhaps a squat is not the most effective thing for that person to do. So having an internal evaluation by a pelvic floor physio is really, really helpful to understand how your pelvic floor responds, to be taught how to do a Kegel correctly. And then you know if you need to focus more so on the down-regulating part of the Kegel, so the letting go part, or if you need to focus more on the up-regulating, which is more the contract and lift. And so as you said, recently there's more, because the awareness has grown and a lot of people are using terms like hypertonic or too tight, my pelvic floor is too tight, my physio's told me my pelvic floor is too tight and I shouldn't do Kegels. My view on that is, I don't believe that we need to say completely don't do any Kegels. I do believe that there is value in learning how to properly contract and then relax the pelvic floor so it goes through its range of motion. But somebody who may be dealing with hypertonicity, so overactivation, I would spend more time on the relaxation component and also other movements that would influence the pelvis. So hamstring lengthening and piriformis release, posterior pelvic floor release exercises. But still then training the pelvic floor to go through movement in a static Kegel, so to speak, but also then bringing it into a movement like a bridge exercise or clam or potentially up into a squat as well. So that was a really long answer. I know, I'm sorry, but
no, it's fabulous.
But and I also used, when I was designing my pelvic floor program for women, I wanted to use the word Kegel, even though it had a bit of a bad rap, because usually that's one of the only words people have heard that is associated with the pelvic floor. So at least introducing the philosophy of something that made people think about the pelvic floor was, it was attached to that word. So that's why I chose it. And I'm trying to bring it back, I guess, so to speak, but make sure that it's clarified that it's not just sitting and squeezing, that there is, it really is taking the pelvic floor through a range of motion and then adding it to movement. So that's why I call it the Kegel mojo. So the mojo piece is that doing Kegels at every red light, like in the way that people historically think about where you just squeeze and hold, that's not taking it through the range of motion, but also it's not translating into our activities of daily life. So if we think of motherhood, we do, as moms, we lift a lot. We carry people and bags and car seats and strollers in awkward positions, and we are lifting and putting down all day long. So I need my pelvic floor to be with me, so to speak, and be working in all of those ranges of motion and movements. And if I sit at every red light, or if I sit at home in a chair statically and do them there, it will have some effect, but it really won't translate into helping with the real true things that I needed to help with. So that's why some people have leaking when they lift things up or when they stand up from a chair, when they jump, when they what have you, when they laugh, the timing's off, the synergy's off, something might be stuck. Maybe one side of the muscle, one side of the pelvic floor, one side of the muscles, musculature is working more, or is maybe there's some scar tissue there that's interfering with its ability to contract and relax. There's so many different things to consider. So we can't just blanket statement say everybody needs to do Kegels. But once we have an understanding and a thorough assessment of our floor, being able to use it in properly and then take it into movement, I think is really essential as we age.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And it's so important to get that internal exam. I know there's a lot of resistance when I recommend that to my clients because it's just, it's a vulnerable thing. And, you know, they just think money or they think time and they think, just exposed. They feel exposed. And I think sometimes there's this shame attached to like, what if it's almost like they're scared of getting a bad grade.
Yeah.
Like, for sure. You know, if I don't pass the test, then rather than you're just gathering information because then you actually know what you're working with.
Right. Exactly.
And that ability to relax as well as engage. It's like, you don't know where you're at on the continuum because your normal is normal. What you feel is what you feel. And so, that external feedback is so powerful to know, okay, maybe you relax really well and you do challenge, you know, that engagement piece is more challenging. Or with a lot of my clients too, they just, they really focus on that engagement piece because that's all they've been taught. That's all they've been told is like engage, engage, tighten, tighten, tighten. And especially with prolapse, there's almost this fear of like, I'm going to fall out of myself if I'm not really tight and tense all of the time because I feel like I'm holding myself in almost.
Yeah, exactly. The people that feel broken who might, as you say, they need to hold themselves together, so to speak. So they develop those patterns totally.
Exactly. And so to even introduce the idea that to be strong, have a strong functional muscle, relaxation is part of the continuum. You kinda, it's definitely, you get a little bit of side eye. You get a little like, what are you talking about?
And I think there's also a bit of the, when you're talking about, you know, kind of fear and apprehension around having an internal assessment, because as women, generally what we know of from an internal evaluation perspective is a PAP. So, and nobody really likes a PAP. They can be a bit uncomfortable. And, you know, there's the cold speculum. There's nothing really that people are enamored about with regards to a PAP. So that's what the experience has been so far. And potentially, maybe there's also been, if the person has had, has given birth, there's also the experiences of internal evaluations during labor, perhaps. And so the thought of, you know, now something else, it can be a bit overwhelming, especially if you already feel like your things aren't the same. And that's part of why I've been kind of yelling from the rooftops about physio for so many years, because it's so, so different from a PAP. And it's very, it's a very gentle, amazing practice, or it's like this amazing education you get in your own body. And so many people walk away going, oh my gosh, I can't believe that I'm, you know, 35 or I've had a baby or all these things. And I've never known that about my body before. I've never known this. And so I just think that the more we talk and the more we ideally bring it into mainstream birth preparation and postpartum recovery, and that it becomes an ongoing part of our health, just like going to the dentist is. Nobody balks about going to the dentist. Nobody really loves doing it, but we do it because we've kind of been conditioned to do it. And I'm hoping that same thing happens from a pelvic floor physio perspective, that it just becomes one of those things that you do every year to keep your body in check.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah, breaking that shame or that fear around like, yeah, it's not, you're not going to get a grade. You're just going to get information.
Totally. Exactly. I just was speaking to somebody this morning, actually, who's, she's done a sort of my certification course, and she's, you know, she very much practices what I preach with her clients as well. And she was talking about when she went to her first pelvic floor physio, and she said, you know, I really felt under the pressure because I thought, I talk about this and I preach this and I teach this, so I better do well. So she had the extra pressure as well too. So yeah, I think people are very, they want to be able to do well. And some people might be afraid of what if, like, what am I going to find out? maybe I don't want to know that information. So that could be scary.
It's true, because there's that fear of being broken. Mm-hmm. And if there's that niggling little like, if they're going to like kind of write it down on a piece of paper that I'm broken, then it's for sure guaranteed in writing. And if I don't go, then, you know, maybe there's that tiny piece of, I mean, I get it. I've mm-hmm. been there mm-hmm. and had all that resistance and all those thoughts. So it's a very, it's not just, I feel like it's a part of the body where if we were talking about like the arm, mm-hmm. like your arm is broken, mm-hmm. you should go see a physical therapist. There's so much less resistance to that idea.
Totally.
Than if we're talking about the pelvic floor.
Totally. Yep. 1,000%.
Awesome. So we are talking to the birth worker community mm-hmm. and in general, we probably mm-hmm. have a few listeners who aren't, but they're going to be working with clients who mm-hmm. Obviously are going to be prenatal, postnatal, that community. Mm-hmm. What is your passion as far as what kind of education? Because there's this really fine line between staying in your lane. Like no one's going to pretend they're a physical, you know, pelvic floor physical therapist if they're not. Mm-hmm. No one's going to pretend to be an expert in something that they're not. But how do we offer this information? How do we begin this networking process? How do we start knowing what resources are out there and who to refer who to when we don't want to step outside of like our lane?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's really, it's important and it's a great question. I think there are different scopes of practice for different professionals, obviously. And the way that most of the education that I'm providing is to, I have a certification course for fitness and movement professionals. So non-internal physios, chiropractors, massage therapists, personal trainers, yoga, Pilates instructors, that kind of thing. And there's also then I have a course for doulas and then an additional course for midwives. And they all have, it's around the same principles with regards to the information. However, the teaching assessment portion of it is different, obviously, based on the scopes of practice. So in the fitness kind of movement professional world, we are able to, you know, we can look at things like posture and movement and prescribe movement, but we aren't doing obviously any internal pelvic floor exams, nor are doulas. And doulas are focused very much on the preparing for labor and managing labor. So like working with the client during labor and some doing the postpartum recovery piece as well, very much in supporting the mom. Doulas aren't movement professionals. And they aren't, unless they've taken fitness training, they aren't able to prescribe movement. But both of those, so fitness and doulas, are in a place where they can screen and start to ask questions and be able to refer on if there's red flags that might be raised. And on the midwife side, so the midwives are allowed to do internal evaluations. They are, again, not movement people, but they are in the prime position to be able to screen and assess for a lot of the challenges that you and I and other people in our field would be dealing with regards to the pelvic floor. So things like incontinence and organ prolapse and diastasis recti, chronic back pain. And being able to refer on as well. So those are sort of the three main areas in terms of education that I'm working with. And all of them have an opportunity to screen within their scope. And really, at the end of the day, I always say, in some ways, we don't even need to screen. We just have to tell these people to go see a pelvic floor physio, really. I believe that every single woman should see a pelvic floor physio and they should see them annually again, just like you see a dentist. That's my opinion. Not everybody will or has access to, but, and not everybody will go because some people rely on their own symptoms as well. And they say, well, I'm fine. I don't have incontinence or I don't have any chronic back pain. I don't feel like something's falling out of me, so I'm good. And that's fine. I would love for there to be, especially in the birth world, the words informed choice are used a lot. And I'm bringing that into the fitness and movement side as well, too, that at the end of the day, it's really about informed choice. And we, I think, have an opportunity to increase awareness and educate our clients about the pelvic floor within our scope, and then say things that are outside of my scope, here's the person that you go see. And I work really collaboratively with them. They handle the internal assessment, evaluation. They do any scar tissue massage. They would be working on improving the function of the muscles that I can't access that will give you more power in your movement. So when you come back to me, we then have an opportunity to get you running faster or to get you lifting heavier if that's a goal that you have. And so I think that, again, if we're always referring out to physio, that's always what I do. And it's what I always recommend. But if maybe you're not always recommending, so other red flags that you might be looking for in your client base that would say, you know, I really think you absolutely should. In movement, there's certain, when you're getting women to connect in with their pelvic floor, some people can get it and some people really, really struggle. And if after a few sessions with different, you know, maybe you've done different stretching or release exercises, different cueing, different positions, if the person's still having a challenge, then maybe there's something beyond our scope that is inhibiting or preventing that person from really making that connection. So usually what I say at that point is, I really think you would benefit from having an internal evaluation. I think that there's something that's potentially hindering your progress with me. And that's not to say that we can't continue to work together, but I think the work that we do would be made more effective if you do so. And then again, it's at that person's choice whether they pursue that or not, if they have an opportunity. From a doula perspective, I think really doulas are all about having resources that they can refer out to, and they are providing their support for the mom and partner during, again, prenatal, during labor, and potentially post as well. And if they're doing postpartum care, which I know many doulas are, again, that's another opportunity for them to be able to say, you know, it can be very beneficial for women to see a pelvic floor physio at the 6-week appointment. It can help with long-term pelvic floor care, so you're less likely to have things like incontinence and prolapse. And even ideally, doulas have an opportunity in the prenatal to do that as well. And if they can also bring the awareness into, you know, doulas and midwives know a lot about birth and the biomechanics of birth and movements and all that. And if they bring their awareness of the pelvic floor into there as well and pushing time and what have you, then it can also, it's just another opportunity to start that conversation, I think. So both midwives and doulas and fitness professionals, especially if they're working with pregnant women, have such an amazing opportunity to help educate and open the eyes and get women more comfortable, give them more knowledge, and then they have more power and they can be in a position to make potentially different choices, so that they aren't left saying, why didn't anybody tell me about this? So that was, again, another very long answer. I could ramble all day long.
No, I get it. I love talking about all this work. It's so powerful. So something I see a lot of in the fitness world especially, but it can kind of trickle into other realms, is this idea of pelvic floor or core, quote unquote, safe exercises. Mm-hmm. Where in general, in theory, you won't be adding extra pressure to, you know, the linea mm-hmm. alba or to, you know, hopefully not bearing down mm-hmm. on the pelvic floor. But there's also this nuance, like you were saying, of checking in with your client, like, are you feeling your, you know, pelvic floor engage? Mm-hmm. Like, not just assuming we're doing safe exercises,
right?
Or you're, quote unquote, doing the right thing, because you can create a shape with your body. But not only, you know, there's so many different ways to create that shape. And so I think for us as professionals to not be afraid to ask the questions that the clients may not know to ask.
Yeah, for sure.
Like you're saying the phrase of, why didn't anyone tell me before? I think there's a lot of assumptions that float around. Sometimes the professional, it's so easy to be like, This is our world. This is what we know. We talk about vaginas and pelvic floors and all of this stuff all day, and we love it. Mm-hmm. And so it's easy, I think, sometimes to assume, like, if there's a problem, they'll bring it up. Like, yeah, they'll feel it. They'll know it. They'll know,
totally,
you know, you're cueing this and I'm not engaging at all. Like, I'm not. And we think, oh, okay, great, now we can talk about it. But from what my experience and what I've seen a lot of is, like, we have to slow down enough to ask, like, what do you feel? Like, what mm-hmm. is happening? You know, do mm-hmm. you know what it means to bear down? Do you know what, you know, like, let's make it real simple and talk about it. And they're like, oh, okay, I've been bearing down this whole time.
Yeah. And people are really grateful when you can actually bring attention to the fact that helps alleviate a symptom that they have. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the point you brought up about the, you know, quote unquote, safe exercises, I know I've seen that evolution so clearly, in that when I first started teaching, so after I started my business, about a year afterwards, I met two other women, one of which was a pelvic floor physio and another one was a trainer like myself. And the three of us formed a separate business. And we were in our intention was to create a postpartum recovery garment and kind of protocol that people would follow with exercise. And along the way, we had other people coming, other fitness people saying, well, how do you know what you know? And I want to learn what you do. So then we ended up creating the certification courses. And at the time, so the first course that we taught was at the end of 2013. And so we had been working for a couple of years in that world. And at the time, there was not a lot of research. There was more and more people were starting to talk about, you know, diastasis in particular. And one of the first people who had ever been talking about it, her main thing was, you can't do crunches, you can do no forward flexion. And so then people were kind of like, okay, well, she's been doing it. She's one of really the only people doing it. So she must know what she's doing. She's been doing it for a long time. So we all adopted that. And then because there was not a lot of research, or there was some that was out with talking about pressures, then all of a sudden everybody was like, you can't do crunches. And then nothing that increases intra-abdominal pressure, rotation might be bad too. So pretty soon, and we did this in our course too, we didn't have any flexion. Mm-hmm. And pretty soon we had people that were now so afraid to move and so limited in their ranges of motion with certain movements, because they had stopped all of this stuff that was quote unquote going to make things worse or dangerous. And so another big, I guess, kind of a turning point, I think, was Anthony Lowe, the physio detective. He started really challenging a lot of the beliefs that people had around movement. And he also then started teaching. And I think that he really has done such an amazing service to opening up the eyes and opening up the, changing the beliefs, I guess, of the practitioners, and some of them also being the people doing the movements themselves. And there's been now a shift back to, it's not the movement that's bad per se. There are certain movements that may not be suitable for certain people, but it's really individualized. And I remember when I took the training with Katie Bowman, which I know you also did as well, mm-hmm. it really helped solidify for me that I never really believed that it was the right thing to do to completely eliminate a movement from our life. And that just because you've been pregnant or had a baby, that flexion was now all of a sudden bad and you shouldn't ever do it ever again. It never sat well with me. And going then going through Katie's certification really kind of started me to challenge, I guess, some of the beliefs that were out there. And then taking the course with Anthony, that was really as I said before, the turning point for a lot of people, that it's now we now need to calm the fears of all the people who are still hearing the messages of you can't do this and you can't do that and these are bad and this is you have to avoid. It's more about the education around, what symptoms are you feeling? These are some of the more common symptoms associated with, you know, prolapse. Or does your back hurt, your SI joint? Do you leak when you do this? Let's change the strategy and see if we can get you doing that differently in a way that the symptom goes away. And then, it starts the conversation. And that's another piece that's been tough for a lot of people, especially in the movement world, where they're not used to using terms like vagina and anus to get them talking and asking questions. Do you leak when you laugh or cough or sneeze or jump? Do this? And some people feel uncomfortable asking those questions, but it's important. And the more we just ask them as part of our screening, because we're movement people, that people who are being asked are grateful and they're thinking, oh my gosh, they must really know. And this is the first time anybody's asked me about this. And you can fix that. And I can, you know, potentially do this exercise again. And it's really liberating for a lot of people. So I'm glad the tides are kind of turning and the pendulum starting to swing the other way.
Oh, absolutely. I feel like with awareness of, okay, understanding the diastasis recti and understanding pelvic organ prolapse and understanding all these issues, mm-hmm. sometimes it can swing so far where we talk about how the body is so fragile. Mm-hmm. Like you were saying, like we can't do this and we can't do that. And all these are things are off limits and no twisting and no, you know, crunches. And it's mm-hmm. like, okay, so if we don't train those moves at all, that mom who hasn't twisted for a year and a half is sitting in the driver's seat mm-hmm. and her baby starts crying and she mm-hmm. needs to twist back and put the pacifier back in.
Yep, exactly. So then she's prone to potentially getting injured.
Exactly. And just because we don't train it on the mat doesn't mean it's not a real life movement that she does, like for her to learn how to do that efficiently and well and smartly and to be able to slow down and know what her choices are, what her movement choices are in that movement is really powerful rather than just like, we don't touch it.
Totally.
Like, we don't go there. Yeah.
Totally. And so many women had so much fear and guilt. Oh my God, I flexed as I, you know, I got out of the bed to get my baby in the middle of the night, or I, as you say, I rotate around. And I think, oh my gosh, that's just, they don't, moms especially don't need more guilt or more pressure about things that they're doing. They have enough that they're, you know, when they're caring for a newborn or they've got maybe multiple children, it's very challenging. So yeah, exactly. As you say, it's, we need to give them more freedom in their choices and awareness and confidence in how they're moving.
Yeah, absolutely. Confidence is huge. It's not that hopeless, you're fragile, you're broken messaging. It's more, you know, we're going to bring awareness to this. It's a real thing. Your body is responding in a real way, but you have, you know, we can develop strength. We can figure out really smart ways for your body to respond to what's going on. So yeah, absolutely.
Totally. Yeah.
So going to start wrapping things up. I like to end the episodes with just, if you have anything, no pressure, but some practical applications for our listeners. So if you are, we're talking to a midwife or a doula or a movement coach, and this information is relatively new to them. Mm-hmm. I mean, they understand pelvic floor and prolapse, but they wouldn't call themselves an expert. Mm-hmm. What would you recommend them starting to, you know, either understand or start questions they would, should maybe start conversations they would have with their clients? Mm-hmm. Just what comes to your head?
So because I'm a big part of my mission is to create that collaborative healthcare network, I usually recommend that if people have an opportunity to seek out a pelvic floor physio within their community, in their neighborhood or in their city, to reach out and introduce themselves and have, if they haven't had a physio assessment before, then have one. And it's of benefit to them. It also gives them opportunities and speaking points about what the experience is like so they can share it with their patients or their clients. And they then, that physio now knows about this midwife and knows that this midwife is supportive of women's pelvic health. And so they start to build that kind of, again, collaborative relationship. And then that midwife would therefore, and doula as well, would then be more likely to refer on to that person. So it's about building the network and then creating those opportunities to refer on and ensuring that women aren't anymore saying, I wish someone had told me about that. So that's one. So I, if you can just reach out and find the pelvic floor physio in your community and introduce yourself, have an assessment and then start that process of referring more people. I do. And again, I've created courses. There are many people who have created courses. So it's not just me, but finding education and courses, whether they're live or online, that introduce the pelvic floor and the concepts of the pelvic floor being part of the core and all of the systems that it influences, you know, from breathing to digestion and calming the nervous system, all of that stuff. So I think it's important to understand the pelvic floor as a whole, its role in the core, and especially from a birth perspective, how the body is changing and adapting and how therefore the pelvic floor also adapts to pregnancy and birth. And again, that ideally would facilitate the recommendations to physio for recovery and just creating that awareness, I think, especially in our, you know, I've said before, modern day lifestyle, that we don't move as much. And then we also have this we have this mentality of super mom and we need to be back at the gym at 2 weeks postpartum, and we don't really honor that process of recovery. So I think also learning from other cultures around the world what they do to support their moms in the postpartum recovery period. So kind of that first 6-8 weeks, usually most cultures that I read about are, they focus on a first 40 days. And so learning what those are as well and how those could be incorporated into the follow-up sessions that they have. So whether they're visiting the mom at home or whether it's when the mom and babe are coming in potentially to their office for a meeting or a follow-up checkup. Learning other practices that could potentially help from a nutrition perspective or from a wrapping perspective or body work. So massage, like my abdominal massage, all sorts of other things that could help benefit them. So those would be probably the two. So really networking with the other pelvic health professionals in your community and also seeking out education that would be more geared to your profession that talks about the pelvic floor and diastasis and gives them some lingo and some terms and some tools.
Awesome. That is practical and helpful and so powerful. Networking is so key, and we're sometimes trained to resist that, like, oh, somehow you're not enough as a professional if you have to refer out. And
yeah, totally.
You know, shifting that mindset of like, no, we all just have one piece of the puzzle and that's all you're supposed to carry. So fabulous. Thank you so much for your time. If our listeners want to find you, where would they find you?
So my main point is vaginacoach.com. And that's also the same. My social handles on Instagram and Facebook are also Vagina Coach. And then the second business that I formed with the other trainer and the pelvic floor physio is called Bellies Inc. And we made a postpartum recovery garment and protocol. So that's belliesinc.com. And also the social handles there are Bellies Inc. So either of those places you can find the education courses. So if you are a doula or a midwife or a movement professional and you want to learn more, you'll find the Get Certified button on both of those websites. And that's it. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, thank you so much for your time and for sharing all your knowledge. We appreciate it so much.
Thank you very much.
Wasn't that a fun conversation? I just love talking with her and seeing that shift towards being able to say vagina without giggling and normalizing talking about pelvic floor function is just, I am here for it. So if you're interested in a simple handout for you and your clients, I've created a pelvic floor 101 tip sheet for you to download. You can find it on our website, thrivingbirthworker.com, under the show notes from today's episode, episode number 3. Thank you for tuning in to our conversation. If you're wanting to hear from more amazing experts, make sure you hit the subscribe button so that you can see each episode the second it drops every week. I'm grateful to have you along on this incredible journey. The information and discussion provided on this podcast are not intended and should not be construed as medical advice. If you have a medical concern, you should consult with an appropriately licensed physician or healthcare provider.